There's a thousand pretty women living out there. They're all living, the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katzlamitas. I write the Cats Report multimedia blog on Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly's websites, Dishy.
Hi, I'm Tricia McCrone, national television producer and Las Vegas publicist. And because it is Lupus Awareness Month, a lupus, person with lupus. Lupusite.
Lupusite. I don't know what that is.
I don't know either.
I don't struggle
daily with lupus. We'll say that. But I want to throw out that it is. I know you do because of me. You kind of have developed a.
I'm part of the lupus support program.
You are, and I just have to throw it out there. It is Lupus Awareness Month.
Yes.
Of the month of May, and it was this Tuesday of this week was technically Lupus Awareness Day, and we were asked to wear orange or purple in honor of this fact.
Mm-hmm.
And who did do it?
Johnny Cats wore
purple on Tuesday for me, so I want to say thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and I like to think that any time I wear purple, an angel gets its wings.
Let's hope I don't get like a butterfly rash on my face. I hope that
butterfly, that's the rash shape. That's
yeah,
why butterflies.
They call it a butterfly rash that we get as lupus people. So, so I want to throw that out there. So I want to promote lupus awareness. And so Google it if you don't know what it is. It's not contagious for any of those wondering.
Because you're really not in the mood to explain what it is.
I'm not in the mood to explain it. No.
Google it, do the searching.
Get your own awareness and search it. And it's not contagious for those of you who think that I might pass it on to somebody. But because I suffer, those around me suffer.
It's not contagious medically. And again, I don't mean to make light of any of it, but it's been a constant theme of conversation between us for a very long time. And I still think that the butterfly rash looks more, I don't know if it looks so much like a butterfly. It looks like some other flighted.
Any way you look
creature,
at it, it's not pretty.
A
and
bat.
It's not something that, don't call it, at least a butterfly makes it seem somewhat attractive at the point.
I think bats are beautiful.
Oh my God. Okay, so we'll get off this topic, but please, you know, for those of you who don't know about lupus, please look it up. It's something that millions and millions of Americans suffer from. And, you know, lupus.org, at lupusla, Twitter. Anyways, I've done my job. I'm
very
bringing
good
awareness.
Very
so
good.
Thank you. Now, I'm going to switch gears a little bit.
Switch them up, baby.
To our weekend, last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You
had lupus last weekend.
I did. And every weekend for the rest of my life. But we sort of split a little bit this weekend.
We did.
Which we rarely do.
We have not done this very often.
And it was the birthday patrol continues. So we had your birthday. We had Alicia's birthday. We had, you know, my family birthday. We had Wayne,
right.
Kat,
everybody. A bunch of them,
my
right
niece,
in a row.
Lauren. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of rounding out our birthday extravaganzas with Tanya Popovich, Pow Partner.
Right.
And I...
A show regular now.
Yes, she is. We talk about her almost every week now. But she had her birthday, and you know, she sort of like loves that old school magic. And we went to a place that you have been to that I've never been. Is it Carlucci's or Carluccio's? How do you pronounce
it? The Tivoli Gardens. Carluccio's Tivoli Gardens. They're a restaurant.
And it is the former Liberace. Mm-hmm. Used to cook there and used to have his friends
he
over.
He built the menu, yeah. Liberace was one of the first actual celebrity chefs. You know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I learned that.
He was one of the earliest celebrities who became a culinary practitioner, and that was where he did it, at Tivoli Gardens.
And is there rumor that it's haunted? Because,
Tanya told me that it's haunted.
And apparently so does Holly Madison wants to as well. I'm really interested in this sort of stuff. I want to do a sleepover there, I've decided.
At the restaurant?
Yes.
We could do that. I know the people down there.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And so, yeah, Tanya wants to do it. And Tanya said that Holly Madison's interested in doing it. So there's a group of us that are interested in haunted places that
I could
would
say
like
something
to...
about doing a sleepover with Holly Madison. But I will not say it.
Out of respect for
anybody and everybody who listens.
So yeah, so I know I'm a little crazy, call it again, but I do, I would love to be in a haunted environment.
Yeah, I don't think it's actually haunted. Although, they claim it. I don't think anything's haunted,
by the way. Now, is it going to be Liberace? Is Liberace going to come out and, you know, and like feathers and stuff? Because that would be awesome.
Well, if he were, he would be in one of his gowns, I would think.
Yeah. And
his costumes, I shouldn't call them gowns.
There was a wedding going on, which of course, Tanya and I crashed because I wanted to see the back bar. Yeah. That is a...
The big piano.
It's a big piano, mm-hmm. and the bar is actually keys. Well, you know, they don't press down, but it looks like keys. It's very cool.
It's a very cool place to check out. You know, and I've wondered, I hope that this place continues to thrive in the face of the closing of the museum, because the museum used to give it a lot of business.
Yeah, and there were a lot of people in there, actually.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
If you care about
Las Vegas history, check it out, because... if you don't check out Las Vegas history, Las Vegas history is history.
Exactly.
And but yeah, I've been there many times. I went there with a friend one time who told me that the you know that little star effect they have on the ceiling, the starburst, that was the star pattern the night that Liberace died.
Really?
This person told me. And I said the same thing. This person knows I'm a journalist, and she says it to me. I go, wow, that's incredible. So I started to pursue
this research, doing my vetting. Big word.
Vetting. I take my cat to the vetting. And I've come to find out that I was being hoodwinked.
Well, I mean,
it was a complete false claim.
I wouldn't have even researched it. I would just believe it, because that's the kind of person that
I am. You did just now.
I did just now, and I still think it could be true, and I still think that it might be haunted.
I don't believe in the haunted.
I went to, in Charleston, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I went to the haunted prison where that is now closed down because of Wayne. I got a private tour of the haunted prison, and I got to find out all the good things. Charleston is a very haunted town, apparently, and so I did all the mm-hmm. tours. Anything that has to do with hauntings, I'm very interested in.
It is haunted down there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was at Fort Sumter one time. I don't know that it was
haunted.
There's
a lot of hauntings going on, but the prison is the most, it was huge slaughters took place there. It's very haunted.
Well, it was a big, huge battleground in the Civil War, Charleston. Well, that's where the first shots of the Civil War were fired.
I know.
Fort Sumter. You probably know all this.
I did. Yeah,
I did the research.
I did every tour you could possibly take in that town in the time that I was there.
You know it was haunted
for a Lupus event, isn't
it? Yeah. You know it was haunted. Of course, it was haunted. It was the MGM Grand Garden Arena Saturday night was haunted.
Let's talk about that. Yes, and that's a good segue. Usually, I make the really crazy segue.
Here's your segue.
Thank you.
I'm going to shift gears now. Deft dish. I'm going to shift gears now and go from talking about hauntings and lupus to boxing. So we had Sugar Shane Mosley, whose dressing room I think was haunted.
Some days I feel like I've been hit by a boxer with my lupus.
I think your brain is haunted. So anyway, enough lupus boxing.
Let's talk about the boxing.
Yeah, there was a fight.
And you were
there. A number of fights at the MGM Grand Garden Arena, main event for which was the Manny Pacquiao, Pac-Man, and Sugar Shane Mosley, WBO welterweight championship bout there in the squared circle, mm-hmm. practicing the sweet science, and Pacquiao won on a 12-round decision, and the crowd started booing the action in about the 7th round.
Wow.
They were not happy with Sugar Shane Mosley's unwillingness to engage Manny Pacquiao, which means his unwillingness to get his head spun off, I guess.
Well, I don't blame him.
Pacquiao, if you ever have a chance, we should do this, to see Manny Pacquiao fight, because he's one of the greats ever. He might be the best light fighter of all time.
Yeah.
Lightweight fighter.
He's definitely the best, you know, the best draw mm-hmm. today.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Did you get any blood on you?
No, after the fight I did. That's another story. I'm kidding. I didn't get any blood on me, no skirmish. I got no spittle on me or any of that stuff.
We have to get to our guests, but I do want to throw out that something that was neglected to mention is you saw your idol.
Steve Martin. Weekend before last.
Yes, my infamous birthday weekend on our, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it was a brilliant performance of Steve Martin and the Steep Canyon Rangers at the Mirage. I hope they come back. It was funny. It was fun. An absolute thrill. I'd never seen him in person before. And as he says, or used to say, excuse me.
Did he say that?
He didn't say that. I just did, though.
Oh. Did he say he was a wild and crazy guy?
He didn't say wild and crazy guy. He didn't bring out the arrow through the head. He did play a lot of really good banjo, and they did a bluegrass version of King Tut to close the show.
And you got tears in your eyes.
I got a little teary.
Yeah.
It was a great moment.
Well, another great moment, another great segue, another great moment is going to be our show with two people that do not have lupus.
Lay it on us.
That we know of.
No, we don't know.
America's Got Talent winner, Michael Grimm.
Mm-hmm.
He has a new CD out, and we saw his release party. We were at his release party this week. And just a great Las Vegas entertainer, Earl Turner.
Earl Turner. They're both top flight entertainers, and we're going to be up with Michael Grimm following this short break.
Time after time, you make me think I can. see me wish for heaven's sake that I could be your man. Then I remember.
Welcome back. Joining us now is a man who was once the featured entertainment at Hank's Restaurant at Green Valley Ranch. That was about 6 years ago.
Yes.
Life has changed since, and today he's a champion of the NBC competition show America's Got Talent, and he's a resident of Henderson, and on Monday night, he celebrated the release of his new CD on Epic Records titled Michael Grimm. Coincidentally, his name is Michael Grimm, and he's sitting with us today. Thanks for being here, Michael.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm going to ask you the first question that's not planned. What's it like to be so cool? Isn't he cool?
He's really cool.
He's so cool.
Really
I can't
cool.
stand
like,
it.
He's too cool right now for us at the moment.
Just occurred to me he's way cooler than
maybe I'll just stay quiet. Therefore, I'll stay cool.
And... We need you to be less cool if that's the case.
That's good.
I have to say, I mean, your show last night, I had never seen you live until Monday night, until the
Monday night at
the Ovation for your CD release party. Mm-hmm. And your voice has this soulful quality that is just, I mean, you can hear it in a speaking voice. It's very sexy. But your singing voice, I mean, were you 10 years old being able to sing with that sort of passion and like growl in your soul?
I think that sort of passion came after a couple heartbreaks, you know.
So. In that case, I should be the best singer.
Before that, I was just singing, you know. I thought I could sing. Sing in pitch, you know, and I would sing with my sister in church, and you know.
Is that where you learned how to sing? Is in church?
Yeah, my grandmother played piano. Yeah, and my Papa Holden built a church, so we would go to that church every Sunday and sing little Baptist hymns, and you know that started me off. I was really inspired by my grandmother. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Your grandmother's a part of your story. For
part of my life, yeah.
Of what you said you were going to do with your money when you won America's Got Talent, to build a home.
Well, they raised me. My grandparents raised me, and I've always told my grandmother I was going to go become a star one day when I was a little boy, you know. And I said I'll get you a big house, you know, and all these dreams, you know, as a child. So when I went on the show, I figured, well, if I win this thing, big if, you know, I hope so, you know, I would be able to help her out, you know, finally. But, you know, I never went on the show to win it. I never thought I was going to win. I just stepped into it, seeing what it was going to do. You know, you just can't plan on anything. You just have to be ready for that. That's all.
I want to talk about that a little bit because you have been here living in Vegas for a while and you really have sort of been all over the scene in town for years. And then what was it that made you decide to do America's Got Talent?
Oh, man, I've been struggling for 20 years trying to make it in this business. I've been everywhere from Nashville, L.A. to New York, all the labels. They wanted me to bring a fan base in with me, you know, my fans, but I didn't know how, you know. I mean, it takes money. And I'm going, well, that's what I'm going to you guys for.
But, to get some fans.
Yeah, to get some fans. But
egg and the chicken.
Well, it's changed. The music business has. And so I figured, well, I'm running out of time here. I need to think of something. I've been playing in clubs and lounges my whole life, and I just don't want to keep going down that road. I need to do something. And before my grandparents pass, I want them to see me do something with my life. So... Judy Alberti approached me, and she's with Green Valley Ranch and the station.
Entertainment Casinos, director.
Yes. And I was working at Hank's at the time, and she said, why don't you go on this show? And tried out for it. Didn't get on there the first year. Didn't even get an answer back from them. And then
really?
Yeah. And then the second year, the year following, they called. And I was on the road with Bill Medley at the time playing guitar for him. And I told Bill, I said, you know, they called me. And what do I do? He says, go. You know, so I flew that next day from, like, Florida, where I was doing a gig with him, all the way to Hollywood, and there I was in front of the judges all of a sudden, you know. So,
jeez, talk about a little bit about the audition process, if you will, Michael. This happened over at Palace Station. They had a call, is that right? And I think if I remember right, Judy was.
Was it Palace Station? Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah, I'm looking at my manager. He's going, yes, yes.
Thanks. It's good to have one nearby, isn't it? But yeah, as I recall, it was they had a number of entertainers who from Las Vegas show up and audition to be on the show.
Yes,
and talk about what that was like at this point in your career.
Well, you know, I mean, it's like a cattle call. You know, it's just that. You know, you're just one of many people getting up there, and a lot of people have a lot of dreams. You could see they're really hoping and that they're getting to get on there, and just as I was, you know. So it's an interesting experience, but you get to meet a lot of people, and they're really wonderful people. You think there'd be really a lot of egos going on around you, but there's not. There's a lot of wonderful people, and it's because they're artists, you know. They take what they do seriously, and they're sensitive people, you know. I think we all artists are, you know, in some way. So
it's a tough environment to be told you're not good enough to be on a TV show, isn't it?
I'm sure, you know.
No, I mean, how did you take, I mean, by and large, they were very, very, of course, complimentary of you, but there were a couple times where they said a couple things that were, you know, a little bit against what the American public would think. They're a little harsh, I think, maybe purposely because of television. How do you take that?
You talking about the judges?
Yes, the judges on America's Got Talent.
Piers Morgan.
Piers Morgan.
All right, let's name names. Piers Morgan.
You know,
he's the one.
I never felt any sort of negative criticism which came from him or any of the judges, for that matter. The people like yourselves who asked me that question, and I look back on it trying to remember, and I really don't feel any negative criticism that came from any of them. In fact, Piers, I feel he was one of my biggest fans, you know. I met him off the side a couple times, and he's a really, really nice guy and was very supportive and just told me to keep doing what I was doing. So, you know, I don't know, maybe it's all TV, you know, in some way, you know, the way they handle some of these.
When you were auditioning, Michael, I know some entertainers in Las Vegas who were part of that audition who were really good.
Oh, yes.
They were dynamite.
Yes. I knew some, too.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe that they would be passed over. And then after seeing you perform live last night.
Yeah, I was a little shocked as well. Myself, yeah.
What do you think of the audition process for a show like that? We had Nick Cannon in here. He did a show with us, and we were asking him about that very thing. And they lean very heavily on biographical.
Your backstory.
Your story, which is how a lot of the acts do get on the show. There's oddities, and then there's some great stories.
Right.
Is that a healthy environment for the entertainment industry? Mm-hmm. Is that healthy for artists like those who didn't make it from Las Vegas?
You know, you're always taking a risk with everything. And, though the show was beneficial for me so far, and it's made some momentum, I really don't know how it could benefit others, you know. I mean, if they're going to the show correctly and they're prepared, you know, I was prepared. Mm-hmm. I was ready, you know.
You had paid your dues for a lot of
years. I paid my dues, but, I also had all my ducks in a row, you know, when I went into the show. A lot of other people go in with the expectations of the show helping them to have their merchandise or their CDs already, or really what you're going to the show for is if you're going to get on there, it's to get a little bit of a fan base, really. I mean, and just to be a celebrity for a moment, you know, if you can. You
get a big audience, right?
Yeah, you know, you don't expect much more out of it than that, and hopefully it'll create a lot of momentum, and people can really, at least it's the way I approach it. Otherwise, I don't get my hopes up, you know?
I read an interview that you did where, you know, I 100% disagree with this, but you thought that you weren't going to win, whereas someone like ourselves, we 100% thought you were going to win, but that you were shocked. Is
well,
that true?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's the truth. I mean, Jackie Evancho, I mean, was next to me. And
I have to say that it wouldn't have been that surprising to see her win.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I thought she was going to win. And all the way to the end where I was standing there next to her, I'm thinking, wow. I can't believe I even made it to this point. And it just keeps going, you know. And when they were about to announce the winner, I was thinking in my mind, well, Thank you to everyone. I was trying to think of the thank yous.
And, you think of how to be cordial and not winning.
And, you know, because I knew she was going to
win. Pat her on the head.
Yeah. No, go over and give her a big hug and say, you know, you did a wonderful job. I thought that I was going to lose and she was definitely going to win. And I was just thinking of how I'm going to gracefully bow out and the thank yous that I need to say and blah, blah, blah. And then they said my name. So I don't know. It was kind of... like a dream, you know, it's very surreal. I don't like using that word, but that's a real surreal moment.
I mean, can you recall exactly what went through your head when they announced your name? I mean, did you think at that moment that your life is going to change irrevocably from this point forward?
At first, I kind of thought, did I hear it correctly? Did they say the loser is Michael and the loser is, you know, I'm thinking,
like the first,
cause they said Michael
the first runner up into Miss America.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know.
Mr. Nevada.
And I was kind of, oh, it is. Wow, everybody's looking at me. Okay.
Millions and millions of people are also looking at you.
So I first went after Jackie, and I made sure she was okay because she's a little girl, you know, and this was a big thing for her, you know. And I have to say she was the real champion in all of this because she handled it like a pro all the way to the end. I leaned down, gave her a hug, and I asked her if she was okay, and she says, I'm just fine. She laughed, and she gave me a big hug. She's so mature, you know, and I think she's the sweetest girl, and she's got such a bright and wonderful future and career ahead of her.
Yeah, David Foster says she can have a 50-year career.
David Foster, and he's knows. Behind her. He knows what he's talking about.
No, mm-hmm. I mean, in Vegas, have you kept in touch with, there's so many, or is there kind of a bond? Because we have Nathan Burton is here, obviously Terry Fader, Recycle Percussion, Murray Sawchuck. Who else is here? Is that it?
Those are the ones that leap to mind. They were on the show.
That were on America's Got Talent that are still working here in town that have really, that sort of catapulted their careers to move to the next level. Is it kind of like a little family? Do you keep in touch with any of them?
I don't keep in touch with any of the guys out on the strip that are currently from America's Got Talent, but they know of me, of course, and I do meet some of the cast from previous shows and stuff, and it is sort of like a family automatically. Yeah,
because you know what each other's been through.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially
Terry
Fader, who also won the show. Yeah. Have you had any correspondence with him since you won?
No, but I know his guitarist, Jim Buck, plays guitar for him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Jim is a good friend of mine. And Jim said on the night that I won that Terry had walked out and announced it to the crowd. And Jim said the crowd went crazy, you know. So it said Terry was, very proud of that, too. So, I can't wait to meet him.
Yeah, he's got sort of a different act than you do, Terry. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
We had him on the show with one of his
yeah, he brought one of
puppets.
His puppets in here.
So I think we ended up interviewing the puppet almost as much as we interviewed him.
I hear he's a wonderful guy.
Yes, very talented. And his on radio, his lips don't move. I can say that. So now I'm going to switch gears a little bit here because I have to be the female here and I can't ignore this.
Be the female wherever you want to be.
Okay, has anyone ever told you? He is just adorable. He's so handsome, sexy, everything, and the absolute most adorable story is you're getting married soon, and I want you to share how you got engaged. It's such a great story.
Well, let me just start by saying...
please say you're still engaged, first of all.
Well, yes.
We've had
indeed.
This blow up in our face before.
I have said this before. They've been like, I got dumped last week.
That would be horrible. No.
That did happen.
It was horrible. On live radio.
Well, that's sad.
Well, congratulations, still being engaged.
Yes, thank you.
First things first.
Let me start by saying that when we talked about marriage a while back, you know, she said, she said, we can go get married at the courthouse. You know, I don't really care about a big wedding or whatever. She says, she said, but make sure the proposal is good or you're going to have to do it again.
A girl after my own heart.
Heavy on the proposal, but light on the ceremony.
I love her.
So did was when I went on Ellen, I thought, well, you know, I won the show. I was going to ask her to marry me anyway, so I might as well go ahead and do this. What a better opportunity than now. And I talked to the staff on Ellen, and they were all down with it. You know, they went all of a sudden, right when I said it, all of a sudden they had a big old thing of flowers in front of my face. Can we help you with this? You know? So I'm going, you know, and it was a great experience too, just being able to propose to my girl who I want to be with for a long time.
She was
I can't
with you
wait to,
before yeah. the audition, right? Before the audition
process. Oh, no, we've been together for 3 years.
Yeah, she
I've known
all
her
this.
For about 4 years, actually. Yeah. I made her chase me around a little bit before. You know,
That's what you do, listen. Huh? We'll edit that out.
So now, when is the wedding?
It's June 1st, and it's going to be in Maui. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And it's just a little simple wedding we're having out there. We just wanted to go back to Hawaii because she took me to Kauai a few years ago, and that's where I really found myself in love with her. You know, going, this is the girl I want to be with. You know, she'd be a great mother for my children, too, you know. So she's just a great human being. Very smart girl.
Well, congratulations to the both of you. And I do, he has beautiful teeth, by the way, but I'm a teeth person. But has anyone ever told you that you have a kind of an Andy Gibb look to you? Do you see it? Andy Gibb?
I do see.
He was a big heartthrob. Yes, Andy Gibb.
Andy Gibb.
Oh, yeah. No, I know who he is. Andy Gibb. No, that's a first. But
okay, I'm sorry. I had to interject. I just had to throw that out there.
I think Barry Gibb would be a little upset. He's Barry Gibb. What's that on Saturday Night Live?
Yes. You know what
I'm
saying?
I'm Barry Gibb.
Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake.
Timberlake, that's classic.
That's amazing. Well, anyways, for ladies out there, I'm sure everyone in the world knows what Michael Grimm looks like, but he's sitting right across from him. He's even cuter in person and looks like Andy.
You sang When a Man Loves a Woman for her, right, on America's Got Talent for Lucy? Is that right?
I did, yes.
That was in honor of her?
Yes,
have you written for her?
I have quite a few songs through the years. Yeah.
Hopefully they're all the nice romantic ballads.
Most of them are, you know, and, you know, some of them are just, you'll have to hear them when they come out, because they will be coming out. I just don't want to put too much out there on them right now. Still need a little polishing. You know, I'm my worst critic on my songs, so it takes someone like Don Was to tell me, okay, Mike, stop.
What was it like working with him?
Exactly.
I mean,
he is very inspiring to work with. Showed me a lot, you know. It was a real collaboration, too, you know. I mean, there wasn't any move that he made without touching base with me. I respect that a lot, and I felt the respect coming from he.
Working for, now that you're under contract with a major label, how does that affect, you had a band in Las Vegas that you were a very good band. You can't take that band into the studio, right? I mean, do they assemble an all-star lineup for you and record with them? And what happens to the guys you played with prior to, you know, the big success on America's Got Talent?
I would love to use my road band for the studio. I think some of that may take some time. There's two different types of musicians. You have your session players and you have the road guys, you know, and some of them do a little of the both, you know, but in this, with collaborating with Don, I asked him to put the band together because he knew what route we were going down on this. We had talked about it, and he said, well, I do know some musicians that would be excellent for this, and in the beginning, we were talking about, let's go very Americana with this album, and let's go maybe the Faces, Rod Stewart, early Rod Stewart, let's kind of touch on that. So he... when I went into the studio, there's Ian McLagan, who was the original keyboard player for the Faces, you know.
Wow.
In there, and he played on the album along with Kenny Arnoff on drums, wow. Waddy Wattel on guitar, Davey Ferringer on bass, Greg Leese also on guitar. So these are an all-star group of musicians. And the reason why we get those kind of guys is because they're just so great at creating together, and they've worked together so much. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the band. Remember the band?
The band.
Yeah, they used to play on everybody's stuff. You know, they just, those guys work together a lot, and they're just on everybody's stuff.
You covered the band Monday night, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Big fan of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I mean, how is it, we keep saying the word surreal, but... Here you were, I mean, Katz mentioned earlier, working at Hank's, and now all of a sudden, it was kind of a joke in the show the other night about that you weren't used to somebody actually changing your guitar out. How has all of this newfound world awareness and the new album and everything coming out, how has that changed you as a performer?
Oh, wow. I plead the fifth on this one. There's so many thoughts running through my head on that one.
You had a packed house. All over the world. There are people in from other countries that came in just to hear your music. I mean, then you think about you know how many years ago restaurant playing.
It's different, you know. I mean, that's all I can say. It's a very humbling feeling seeing everyone out there listening and paying attention to you and your music and what you may have to say. You know, I've never been good with speaking. I must be honest, I'm kind of nervous now talking, but, you know.
Well, we still see cool, so it's not true.
But when I'm up on stage, yeah, you are cool. You make me feel very comfortable too, guys. But up on stage, you know, I'm used to people dancing. I'm used to there being 20, 30 people at the most out in the crowd coming out to see me and dancing and not looking at me. So it's very different, you know, and I have to try to engage them somehow so I can break that mold on my end, not theirs. They're there for me, but I have to somehow make a fool of myself so I can break the mold out of, you know, and I never know what it's going to be, but I just have to be honest with them, and that's the only way I can.
Is there more pressure for you to perform? I mean, I would think there would be to be great on stage now as opposed to before, because you know you're the ace from the contest show. You've won.
It seems to be
every fluffed note, every missed key is recognized now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he doesn't have any of those.
Oh no, I took one last
would be,
night.
Hypothetically,
I took one on the guitar last night. I almost threw the band for a train wreck on that one, but they were so good, man. They kept me going. They when I fell, they picked me up, you know, so they're great guys. But yeah, I stumble here and there, and I did last night.
I mean, you used to sit in a lot with one of Katz's favorites in this town, Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns. Is there any chance that in a break from all this crazy going around promoting the new CD that you may be stopping in to see them at the Palms at any time?
Maybe, you know, I used to go out there all the time, and yeah, I used to sing with them. Jerry Lopez would call me and give me work with them, and it was really just an honor playing with those guys. They're the best musicians, in my opinion, in the West. I mean, a collection of guys that can play like that, you can't find that anywhere around. Yeah, Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns. Go see them Monday nights. You might see me out there.
You've been with them one time, haven't you, since the win? Have you played with them before?
Yes,
Since the show?
I did go in one night.
Show. Yeah.
I went in one night. To
I wasn't
say
there. They said
the
you
guys.
Were there.
Yeah.
Maybe you weren't there.
It was probably the one night the Cats missed it because he goes every single month.
Well, you know, I
might as well be in the band. You know, I'm there a lot.
I love singing with those guys, and every time I go in, I've always felt like a brother to the band. You know, and they definitely make me feel like a brother. You know, but when I walk in now and you know, since winning the show on a Monday night or something, you know, I feel a little strange walking in because I don't want Jerry seeing me and feeling pressured like all of a sudden he's got to get me up, which he always does.
Yeah,
me up as, you know, Michael Graham, I love being just the brother to those guys, you know, and there's something deeper, yeah, with them than just music.
I want to talk real quick before we go, because we're kind of running out of time. I want to talk a little bit more about the CD before we go, and to announce that you are going to be on the Today Show May 18th. Talk about a huge, huge thing. That's incredible. Congratulations. But last night you did all the songs from the CD, and I mean, you did a duet with Travis Tritt, which,
yes.
I mean, you were talking about how that was just an amazing experience.
That was an amazing experience. He was my idol growing up. I grew up on country music. He sang some Otis Redding type of songs to Lynyrd Skynyrd and Allman Brothers and showed me it was okay that I could sing that other type of music. Because growing up in country, you don't want to offend that audience, you know? And you don't want to do anything too strange, too astray from that crowd. But he had the same crowd, so he showed me it was okay. And I learned by watching him and listening to him when I was a kid. I wanted to be like Travis. And then we're putting an album together, and I was thinking, well, what can I get him to be on here? Don said he did an album with him, The Restless Kind. He said, I can call him up. He did. He said he'll do it. What song? I said, well, Simple Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because
he came from Lynyrd Skynyrd background, so what was weird is that we did it on a computer. He was in Georgia. And he was looking at me on a computer. Yeah. And
really?
I was in Hollywood, right? And it's a studio out there. And it was really unique. Yeah.
So was it strange talk? Was that the first time you'd actually had a conversation with your
first
idol?
First time I met him, yeah, and everything. Got to talk to him. We're looking at each other, you know. It was very interesting, yeah. And he's a great guy.
right.
Well, we have to say the CD is absolutely incredible. Michael Grimm.
Michael Grimm is
one of the singles, one of the first singles that's going to be coming out that we heard a little bit earlier. And you wrote the song. You wrote a lot of the songs on there and did a lot of incredible covers. When you sang Stay With Me and You Don't Know Me the other night, I was in chills.
She melted.
I can't say enough wonderful things about how talented, how thrilled we are to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we have reached the final groove, Michael. It's a pleasure to meet you and see you, and it was a great experience being in the audience the other night at Ovation.
Thank you for coming out there. Yeah.
Oh, no problem. Yeah. No problem. It was pretty easy. I just had to drive.
You know? Yeah, I know, right.
But I did plunk down the 20 clams for the CD.
There you go.
You know,
Thank you so much.
A lot of mileage out of this. It's called Michael Grimm. Look for him on May 18th on the Today Show. And you got anything else planned in Las Vegas?
Maybe.
Okay.
If we do, we'll let you know.
Then check it out on Twitter at Michael_Grimm, and maybe you'll find out where he will be near you.
I'm going to have to do some work, I guess. All right, Michael, for all of us, just thanks for coming on down.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Las Vegas! Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So, Viva Las Vegas! Viva!
You're a total catch, and any guy would be psyched to be your man. You should just make room for somebody who's nice to you and...
You know what? He's honest. He told me that we are what we are, and we're just having fun, and I like
that. He also told you need dental work. He's an ass.
That's Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph as a pair of best friends in the comedy Bridesmaids. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at movies opening in theaters this week. Produced by comedy kingpin Judd Apatow, Bridesmaids stars Wiig as a down-on-her-luck woman whose life falls apart even further when her best friend asks her to serve as maid of honor for her upcoming wedding. Bridesmaids successfully combines both the heart and the gross-out humor of typical Apatow productions with a genuine female perspective that comes from Wiig, who's both the star of the movie and the co-writer. Not only is this a very funny movie, but it's also genuinely affecting in its look at female friendship. Like a lot of Apatow movies, Bridesmaids drags on a little longer than it should, but overall, it's both funny and heartfelt and worth seeing. I give Bridesmaids 3.5 stars out of 5. Also opening in limited release this week over at the Regal Village Square is The Beaver, starring Mel Gibson as a depressed man who decides to communicate with the world solely via a beaver hand puppet.
The person who handed you this card is under the care of a prescription puppet designed to help create a psychological distance between himself and the negative aspects of his personality. Please treat him as you normally would, but address yourself to the puppet. Thank you.
This movie has a decidedly odd premise, and it could have worked either as a crazy all-out comedy or as a really dark and weird psychodrama, but director Jodie Foster, who also co-stars, takes the movie in a bland, overly serious direction that robs it of the kind of weird impact that it could have had. I give The Beaver 2.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at movies opening in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and online at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair, so Viva Las Vegas! Viva!
Welcome back. Sitting with us now is one of the more energetic performers ever to headline in Las Vegas, dating to his days when I found him at the Rio Bamba Cabaret at the Rio Hotel Casino. That was about 1998 or 99, I think. He's also performed at a number of resorts in the city, the Shimmer Cabaret at Las Vegas Hilton, Palace Station's old track showroom. And on May 20th through May 22nd, he's at Suncoast Showroom, and he's with us right now. Welcome to the show, Earl Turner.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I always enjoy seeing you.
I have no headphones.
That's all right.
I know. Earl doesn't have headphones.
You knew I was going to mention it.
I knew he was going to.
Call them cans.
Which one of the two of us offered you headphones?
Well, of course, the really, really good-looking one offered me headphones. So, hey, I'm very happy about the offer.
I thought Trish offered you the headphones.
And, of course, when you first saw Earl in all those places, I wasn't old enough to be in.
Seriously.
I'm just kidding. No, but seriously. I have a better Earl Turner story than this.
Before you have a good Earl Turner story. Tell us that story, Trish. I'll be back in 15 minutes.
One of the most, I still think to this day, Earl was one of the founding people with my family, Wayne Newton.
Right.
And Frankie Shinta, mm-hmm. and Clint Holmes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The four of you got together and put on, right after 9/11, the first Veterans Day, the USO show, that right. it really was a landmark thing in Las Vegas. It was at the Mandalay Bay Event Center, and it's the first time that all of the entertainers up and down the strip came together, and the Ticketmaster donated their cost, Mandalay Bay Event Center, right. the Musicians Union, the Stagehands Union, and so I just want to give another huge thank you out to you, because that event was really, it was a one-of-a-kind thing that I don't think will ever be repeated in this town.
That was an amazing collection of talent.
It was. It really was. It was surprising how quickly it came together.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost as if instinctively people knew that it had to happen. They knew that it was going to happen, and so it did happen.
Yeah,
it
the four of you, I was there really, then, like the four of you got together in Wayne's dressing room at the Stardust yep. at the time, which isn't yep. even there anymore, mm-hmm. after one of Wayne's shows mm-hmm. and all of your shows after you all were done. And the four of you just sat down there and did a power session all night and literally made Las Vegas history. So
yeah, it was great.
That was cool. And thank you for doing that, because it did so much for the USO. Yeah. So
we're coming up on our 10th year anniversary. I often wonder what happened to the video footage.
I know. I wonder.
We never saw
it.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Wayne has wondered the same thing as well. We all
really?
Have, yeah.
It was recorded.
Yeah. I mean, I had the clips from Entertainment Tonight and all of that, but I never.
Really?
I never had the whole show. Someone recorded the whole show, and I don't know what ended up happening to that. But I know Wayne has asked the exact same thing.
Wild collection of talent. I mean, you guys opened. You guys came out, the four of you,
right.
and sang right at the beginning this big, powerful
right.
number, America by Neil Diamond, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep.
And God, Amazing Jonathan was on that bill. And
it was everybody. Siegfried and Roy. Uh-huh.
Siegfried and Roy came out. Yeah, that's right.
Everybody. Uh-huh. That was the first time I actually met some of the leading politicians in the state. At that time, Harry Reid.
Mm-hmm.
He was there backstage.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary.
It was a magical day. Sold
big.
Out so fast. Magical day. So
yeah.
See, so I have fun. A great Earl Turner story. So I got to work with Earl because I did the publicity for part of it, Steve Flynn and I. So mm-hmm. And Frank Lieberman, the late Frank Lieberman, who was amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
And
he was
so
with
mm-hmm. so but to be a part of that is and to work with such people as Earl Turner was a blessing. So it's been years since I've seen you, so it's so nice to see you again.
It has been. It's good to see you.
And I'm always been a huge fan, but that, I mean, as a person, I got to know you, and I'm a huge fan of you as a human being. That you're
Thank
incredible.
You.
And that was at the time, I agree with her on all this. At the time you were at the Rio, when all this was going on?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was going into the main showroom.
The showroom there. Which
I was going into the main showroom.
A big moment for you.
In rehearsals for that at the same time we were doing this event. So it was a busy time.
Yeah, you've had some, it's just been a kind of a star-crossed history here in Vegas. I remember seeing you, and I wrote this at the time, seeing you at the Rio Bamba there,
mm-hmm.
and that audience just spilled out into the casino floor,
right.
into the slot machines, and I had no idea what, I was there at an event up at the Voodoo on the roof there, and I was walking out, and I heard this powerful sound coming out of that cabaret, and I saw all these people, and I'm like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And I went in, and you were wearing a yellow suit,
canary
yellow suit.
Absolutely.
Just
absolutely.
Throwing it out, man. I mean, it
absolutely.
Was just like, I have got to know who this is and what it's all about. And then shortly after, you can tell a story. You went over to the showroom. And
I went over to the showroom. It was actually a deal that I sort of came up with Harrah's, because they were making a transition from that lounge. They were turning it into bikinis or something like that.
Right, yeah, that's right. They made it
into a
club.
And so I opted to, because I wanted to try to continue on this. You know, Wayne Newton, speaking of that, your brother-in-law, is probably the last person to actually transition from the Las Vegas lounges to the showroom.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, that I can recall.
Yeah, he did it
correctly. That's a tough, you know, that's a tough thing to do because of the way Las Vegas has changed.
Uh-huh.
It used to be that you went to the lounges to see all the up-and-coming performers, mm-hmm. and somehow or another, the whole lounge identity changed, and it became sort of background music and, you know, that kind of thing, which I was determined never to succumb to.
Mm-hmm.
So at any rate, I can...
Well, I've seen you many times,
and
there's no one
it.
Can describe you as background music.
Yeah.
You're the most energetic, like, just... Out, just like No, just leaving it all out on
it
the stage.
It wouldn't be background music for long.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I had to say that happened,
I think, to a certain degree. But at any rate, I made a deal with Harris after they decided to close the Riobamba to go into the DeShinta showroom on their off nights, Wednesday and Thursday nights. So that was a transition at that time. And then after that, I was fortunate enough to be offered the headlining slot in Harris and Laughlin.
That's
and that was a six-month deal that turned into 2 years. And then after that, I was offered the headlining slot in my own theater in New Orleans.
That was a great period,
wasn't it?
How do you explain? You were really big in that area. You have an incredible following. I know because a lot of those people come out when you're here.
Yeah.
I meet a lot of them.
Yeah. New Orleans, I think it was just a matter of being different, a matter of timing. Harris wanted to put a face on the property. And they asked me to be that face, and that's pretty much what it comes down to. The people there were so extraordinary and so warm; it was very easy to fall in love with the city because you fell in love with the people first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we went there, and we just became a part of the you know the goings on and the events. And there's always something going on in New Orleans. I mean, you think we have something going on here? The events there are just extraordinary.
That is the place to party.
Yeah, because they're based in a heritage, you know, they're based in history. It's not just simply, when you go to dinner in New Orleans as compared to dinners in Las Vegas where it's about turning over the number of covers and getting people in and out. When you go to dinner in New Orleans, you may be there 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
Dinner is an event.
Yeah. Okay?
And you sit and you visit and you chit-chat and you talk and you take your time. And that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
So becoming a part of that whole environment and that whole community was extraordinary because there's so much history there.
And this was prior to Katrina, correct?
Right. Just yes.
And
yes.
So, I mean, obviously you had to, you did become so much of the community there. When the whole Hurricane Katrina just devastation happened, did you continue to do things and support the community?
I came right back here to Las Vegas because I had, at that time, teenage children, high school age children, and because we didn't know what the future of New Orleans schools were going to be, or we didn't know what the future of New Orleans was going to be.
Period.
That's the schools.
Yeah.
I had no choice. This irony is Hurricane Katrina striking on your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You turned.
We don't have
August
to age
29th.
People.
August
exactly.
29th.
Thank you. As a woman, never give out ages.
Yeah. August 29th, Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans.
Wow.
And by the 1st of September, we had to make a decision, my wife and I, as to what we were going to do in terms of getting the kids back.
Yeah, your children, the school started.
So we had to come back to Las Vegas because that's what they knew. That's where we're from. And that was the simplest solution based on what we knew. And then subsequently, you know, the contract was canceled and, you know, all those things.
Well, of course, everything's shut down in the town.
Everything changed.
The 9/11 and then Katrina had prominent profound effects on your career.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly the second disaster.
Oh,
that led you to the Palace Station, right?
Right. I came back here and I kind of took a break for about 6 months and then decided that I needed to, you know, to get back out there. And I, at that time, knew the vice president of Station Casinos Entertainment, Judy Alberti, who's been there for years and years. We all know her.
Yep.
And, you know, I decided to go to Palace Station for a while. But, you know, everybody's got a story. The interesting thing about what I find in this business, in show business, is that when you spend just a bit of time talking to people, everyone has a story. And that story is very similar to the story that you have. There are things that happen in your life that you have no control over, that you have no way of seeing.
Yeah.
At the same time that I was, at the same time 9/11 happened, 5 days, 6 days before that, I found out I had prostate cancer.
Oh, my
Lord. Well, I didn't know this.
Very young. Very young at the time, under 50, and I had to deal with that as well. So I was dealing with transition there. 9/11 was a transition for all of us as Americans, and I'm dealing with my own health issues.
Sure.
And but
that's
if you sit and you talk to people long enough, you'll find that you share more things in common then you even know, because every single person, you and you and all of us, mm-hmm. have a story.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, we know someone who's been through change and transition in their life.
Right. You're listening to Cats with a Dish. Our guest is Earl Turner on May 20th through May 22nd. He'll be at the Suncoast Showroom. Your friend Clint Holmes had mm-hmm. Prostate cancer, talked about it on stage a lot.
I think his was
colon, cancer. That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Early, yeah.
Yeah, and he brought it out into his show and talked about all that. I don't recall you ever bringing that out.
You know what? For me, it was profound in and of itself, and it was life-changing, but it wasn't something that I really felt, you know, comfortable discussing with a lot of people, because I didn't want that to be the the subject of conversation.
Because I was seeing you a few times a week during that time, and I had no idea. Yeah.
The conversation, you know, would always go towards that, and I didn't want that to be what I was about, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going through prostate cancer, you know, this, that, and the other, and you know how our stories can change and grow and be different. Yeah. So I just chose to keep it just among a select group of family and the people that were working with me at the time. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely life-changing, as we've all had events in our lives, sure. whether they affect us directly or not, that are life-changing. So, you know, I'm a cancer survivor. Mm-hmm. And
it hits to the difference in how entertainers approach their craft and their shows. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we use Clint as an example. There's a lot, and Wayne has done this too, where they put their story out there and weave it into the music, and mm-hmm. the music becomes it's an autobiographical experience. When I watch your show, I feel like I get to know you, but you don't mm-hmm. come out and do a narrative like a lot of others do. I feel like I know what you're about by the way you perform. I know you're very hardworking, for example. That's pretty obvious, because after two songs, you're soaked in sweat.
exactly.
You don't stop. You just, it's nonstop, you're like, but the energy is running up there.
But yeah, right. but and yet, there is a part of you that's pretty private too, it seems like.
Yeah, I think so. But my show has always been, it's always been people-oriented. In other words, my show is not so much about me or what I like or what my tastes are. It's about connecting with the audience in such a way that for that hour or that hour and a half, they forget whatever their issues are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see? So I tend to lean towards that and away from the personal type of message, you know, mm-hmm. If you will, that kind of thing, because I really don't want... during that time, it's all about forgetting what your problems are.
Exactly.
Because my connection with the audience is a little bit different. I think that I break the fourth wall. Mm-hmm. I'm the worst at it. I mean, I break it all mm-hmm. the time. I like to bring the audience into what I'm doing. And Sammy Davis Jr. once said that not everybody was going to like what you do, but don't let them leave feeling like you didn't work hard.
Exactly.
So I want to work hard, and I want to show you a really good time. When I walk into that room... and walk out on that stage or walk through the stage, through the room on the way to the stage, I can look in people and tell if they're sad, if they're upset, if they're angry, if they're anxious, if they're shy, if they're nervous. I can pick up all of this from just a few moments in the audience, shaking hands, you know, looking in people's faces. You can tell a great deal of things about what's going on in your audience just from a few moments, if you've been doing it as long as I have.
Yeah.
And in order for me to enable people to have a good time, I have to, in my own way, give them permission. And once I give them permission, then they forget about who they are and what their issues are. And they, for the moment, for those moments, just have a good time. And to me, that's what show business is supposed to be about.
And it reminds me of something that Wayne has said a lot of times. He said, for that, you know, if people don't want to hear what I'm going through, they don't want to hear my political views, they don't want to hear that I'm sick, they don't want to hear that I'm having a bad day or that I had a bad meeting today. They just want to be entertained. They want to be taken away from their problems. They don't need to know my problems.
And that's exactly the truth. Yeah. That's the truth. I mean, really. You can take songs and connect them in such a way to make people think about, you know, all of their ills, but why?
Yeah.
I mean, what's to what end?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, in that hour and a half, you're not going to solve anybody's problems. When they leave, they've still got the same issues to deal with that they had when they walked in the door. The best you can do is enable them for just a little while. Just let that go.
And you do know? That.
So why do, I don't want to take you there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to. I really don't want you to think about those things. I want you to forget about everything except what I'm doing. I want you to forget about who you are. It's interesting when you see, you know, people 70, 80 years old up dancing. To me, that's some of these people haven't moved in 20 years. You know what
you
I'm
described
saying?
The Suncoast audience perfectly.
That's right. No,
and there's nothing
the
against
there.
That's
I
true.
I go to Suncoast.
There's nothing wrong with being being in that age division. Yeah. But that's a different crowd up there. Yeah. I know it. Yeah, I've
and
seen.
You, and
I've
you
seen
think, you know, you
a
think
lot of shows
about
up
those
there.
Things. Mm-hmm. You think about those things.
Exactly.
And that's really important. That's really important. So that's what we're supposed to do. That's my philosophy as to what we're supposed to do. So I try not to make the show about me. It's not about me. Mm-hmm. It's about you.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Sammy Davis. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of that in you. You're inspired by him. Who else? Is there any others that, who you really took paid attention to when you were a young performer before?
James Brown, Tom Jones, the Beatles, all of those people from the 60s, the Jackie Wilson, all those people that really, Otis Redding, those people that worked hard. I played, you know, a lot of country music because my father's a big country music fan, but not my father is country. He's not a fan; he is country. But he's also gospel, and what I do in my show is a lot, very much rooted in gospel because gospel is call and response. You know, I say something, you respond, and it's all about that type of communication. So yeah, all of those people from all of those true entertainers, which you know we are really lacking today, you know, the people that go out there and they just work that, you know, Wayne Newton goes out there and works and they do everything, including standing on their head if necessary, you know, to entertain you, you know, without pretense, without any of that. I am up on stage, so you must regard me. Forget that. That's not what that's about. Those people.
You are an entertainer's entertainer.
Yeah.
I mean, there really are few of them out there. And I think that you know, Wayne has said that as well, that with the younger generation, they are so produced and so just, this is what you do here, and here, that whole magic of connecting to an audience isn't there.
Right. And you know what? Gladys Knight's show title is so apropos, A Mic and a Light. An entertainer, if you take away all his instruments, take away all his band, all his trappings, can sit there on a stage, on a stool, and entertain you.
That's the best part of her show when she's
songs,
just sitting on the stool.
I love it when she does that. When she just sits down, sings those ballads on a stool. We were melting. It was incredible.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the mark of a true entertainer. Take away all that stuff. Take away all that production.
Yeah.
Take away all those lights.
Dancers.
All right, now do something.
Now, like what you did at Clint's party the other night at the Bootlegger at the open mic cabaret that Kelly does. I mean, you showed up and did a number on guitar. It was great.
Yeah, I kept forgetting the lyrics, though.
It was all right.
It was okay. I kept forgetting. No, I told my wife, I said, I don't know what I was. I wanted to do the song, and I realized I haven't done this song in like years.
But no prompter to lean on.
But that's it. That's part of it, too.
Yeah. You know, roll the punches.
Oh, please.
Forget it. I love
it. It's that humanness that makes you real.
Right.
You know, if I screw up on stage, I'm probably going to acknowledge it. You know,
right.
I'm probably going to say, you know what, I'm not where I'm supposed to be if it's my show, you know, and that's what makes it fun. So.
Yeah.
All right, Earl, we got to close the curtain on this segment. My
already.
Friend, yeah, already. I know.
Had a great time.
Flies,
thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's great.
Thanks
it's
for
great
coming
to see
on.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good to see you.
Yeah, I saw Earl at Clint's thing and we said,
do
some radio.
I early at night. And this is under the weather.
And this is so great. This is so, you know, the opportunity to show yourself as something other than a performer is always great for me, you know, because we do have a point of view. We do have something to say, and this is a great forum in which to do it.
Not all
and
things.
Definitely
on stage
go
all the time.
Go see him this week. This weekend, the 20th through the 23rd.
It's the May 20th, 20th, 21st, and 22nd.
Right.
Suncoast Showroom, 7:30.
Hello.
Out there in the heart of Summerlin.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Turner, it's always a pleasure. We'll do it again.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you much.
Las Vegas.